The budget request of the state police unless the state police agree to conduct an investigation on a political rival. You would agree?
Correct.
Yes, sir.
In your view, is it any different for a member of Congress? Of course not, right? Would you agree that the president has the same obligation as the mayor, as the governor, as the member of Congress to not withhold aid unless he gets an investigation into a political rival, Mr. Morrison?
Yes, sir, I would agree with that hypothetical.
I would agree.
Thanks. And we're having a debate here, both sides, as to how to read what's plainly before us, the presidential phone call where the president ignored the work of the advisors in the National Security Council of talking points and instead chose to talk about the Bidens and talk about Hunter Biden and ask for an investigation. So we are just going to have to debate that. But isn't the principle that no person, including the president, is above the law absolutely essential and worth the effort to make certain that we continue to guarantee, Ambassador Morrison?
Sir, I haven't been promoted.
I'm sorry, Ambassador Volker? I'm sorry, pardon me.
Yes.
Yeah, and Mr. Morrison?
Sir, the rule of law is essential to our democracy.
It's so true. You know, we've had some discussions and challenge from the other side that the president has authority in foreign policy to do what he likes. And in fact, he does. You know, a recent president by President Trump to take our troops out of Syria and allow the Turkish forces to go in literally meant that some Kurdish families went to bed Saturday night and woke up Sunday morning, packed their kids and fled for their lives. A lot of people, including both sides of the aisle, totally disagreed with that. But the president has the authority to do it, impulsive as that decision may have been, unwise as it may have been, as threatening to our national security. We're not talking about that here. And Ambassador Volker, I've listened to your testimony, and I take it and thank you for making efforts to try to advance what had been a bipartisan Ukraine policy, help Ukraine get rid of corruption, help resist Russian aggression. But what you came to learn painfully is that there was a sidebar Ukraine policy with Giuliani as the advocate, and it appears Ambassador Sondland is very much involved. Is that correct?
I don't know everything about that, sir.
You don't, but as you have been involved and with the benefit of hindsight, while you were working on what you thought was stopping aggression and ending and eliminating corruption, there was a side deal here to get investigations going, correct?
Yeah. So, yes, sir, my objective was purely focused on support for Ukraine,
right,
national security, and I now have learned through other testimony about the president's statement about investigating Biden and other conversations that I did not know about.
Right. And thank you for that, and thank you for your candor about Vice President Biden's integrity and service. But the bottom line here is at the end of the day, we're going to have to make a judgment about what the president was up to with respect to that request for the favor and how it repudiated the policy that was the bipartisan effort in Ukraine and raises questions about he, in that hypothetical example I gave of the mayor, held himself to be above the law. I yield back.
Mr. Maloney.
Gentlemen, thank you for being here. Ambassador Volker, I'm struck by your opening statement. It moved a long way from the testimony you presented to us in October. And I know you gave a reason for that, which is that you were in the dark about a lot of these things. Is that fair to say?
That is one thing, is that I learned a lot out of the testimony.
You
of
learned
others.
A lot.
Yeah.
You learned a lot. And what you said on page 8, I'm referring to your statement that you gave this morning, this afternoon, that I did not know, this is quoting, I did not know that President Trump or others had raised Vice President Biden with Ukrainians or had conflated the investigation of possible Ukrainian corruption with investigation of the former Vice President Biden, right?
Correct.
You didn't know Burisma meant Biden. That's what you're saying.
Right. Right? I had separated the two.
I got it. Well, you didn't know, right? I mean, you were, do we have to go through it, sir? I mean, you were there on May 23rd for the meeting with the president when he said, talk to Rudy, and Rudy Short cared about the investigations, which you now know meant Biden, right? But you missed it on May 23rd, right?
No, sir. I understood at the time that Hunter Biden and Vice President Biden's son had been a board member of Burisma.
I understand, but you didn't read that as a request to investigate the Bidens at
correct.
That time. That's all I'm saying.
Correct.
And on July 10th, you were in not one but two meetings in the White House where Ambassador Sondland raised the investigations, but you didn't know it was about the Bidens. That's your testimony, right, at
That's
the time.
Right. I did not think he was talking about anything specific.
Right. You heard him say investigations. You thought it was inappropriate. And the chairman asked you about that, but you said, oh, it's because I didn't know it was the Bidens. I just thought it was inappropriate. And then I guess when they were in the wardroom and Ambassador Sondland raised Burisma and the Bidens in 2016, you missed that, too, as I understand it.
That is correct.
Right. And then, of course, on July 18th, you knew aid was withheld. And then in August, you spent a good part of the time with this statement with Rudy Giuliani, right? I mean, you were the guy making the changes and interacting with Ukrainians. You were putting in Rudy's changes, which included a call for investigating Burisma and the 2016 elections, which you now know meant Biden's, right? You didn't know it at the time, right? But now we know it, right? And then on September 1st, you were in Warsaw. I mean, you're at every point in this. You were in Warsaw, and you were there when Ambassador Sondland told Andrei Yermak that he was not going to get security assistance, he wasn't going to get a White House meeting unless there was the investigation. And I understand you missed that. You were out of the loop then.
That's not correct, sir. So I was not in Warsaw at these meetings.
Oh, excuse me. You were not in Warsaw, but you heard about it right after from Sondland. Is that right?
No, that's not quite correct either. It was sometime later.
I got it. So, but now we know, right? Now you know what it meant. And you said, in retrospect, I should have seen that connection differently. And had I done so, I would have raised my own objections.
Right. That is correct.
And what are the objections you would have raised, sir?
What I would have raised is that people are conflating investigating the Bidens with investigating this Ukrainian company, Burisma.
Would you have objected to the president asking for an investigation of the Bidens? As you sit here now, you said, I would have raised my own objections.
Yes.
If you knew it was the Bidens.
If I knew we were talking about investigating Vice President Biden and asking the Ukrainians
and
to
his
do
son.
That would be inappropriate, and I would have objected to that.
Right. And so if you had heard him ask for it on the call, and you said, In retrospect, Ukrainians clearly would have been confusing, right?
Correct.
Is confusing the right word, sir? I mean, it would have put them in the position of having to do something inappropriate, right?
Well,
investigate the Bidens.
I think confusing is the right word because they were clearly hearing something different from the president in one conversation and different from me as a U.S. special representative. Different
well, or maybe, sir, they understood that investigating Burisma and investigating 2016, in fact, meant the Bidens, even though you didn't. I mean, in fact, at the time you were talking to Yermak and putting those changes in the statement, he had talked to Sondland, right, at the same time. And so the point being that they were put in an impossible position. They were being asked to do something inappropriate. And you now know that, right? And you would have raised your own objections.
Well, I know they were asked in the phone call to do that. In the conversations that I had with the Ukrainians, we were not asking them to do that. And even at that point, the Ukrainians, perhaps with the knowledge of this phone call, which I did not have knowledge of at the time, they said, we just don't want to go there.
Right. And so in retrospect, though, you would have raised objections. You would have said it was inappropriate for the president
correct.
To do this.
Correct.
And Mr. Morrison, can I just ask you, sir, so you, I'm stuck on this issue of you didn't see anything wrong with the call, but you went straight to NSC Legal to report it. Is that your testimony to us today?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Yield back.
Ms. Hemmings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Morrison, and to both of you, thank you so much for your service. Thanks for being here. It's been a long day. Mr. Morrison, just to follow up on the question from my colleague, you responded earlier to a series of questions about the call and basically saw nothing wrong with it. Yet you skipped your chain of command to go to legal counsel to find out, I guess, to find out what to do because you were concerned about the political fallout. not about anything being inappropriate or wrong with the call. Is that correct?
Ma'am, I don't agree with the premise, no.
Okay, could you tell me why you felt the need? You saw nothing basically wrong with the call, yet you skipped your chain of command to go to counsel because of what? What was the reason for that?
I don't know that I... Again, I don't agree with the premise, ma'am. I don't think I did skip my chain of command. If I had seen something wrong, I would have...
Who's your direct report?
The Deputy National Security Advisor.
And the name of the person?
Dr. Charles Kupperman.
Okay, Dr. Kupperman. Did you speak with him before you spoke with legal counsel?
No. No, ma'am.
But you don't feel you skipped your chain of command in doing so, going directly to counsel?
Ma'am, if I may, I viewed my engagement with the NSC legal advisor as one largely focused on administrative matters. I was interested in locking down the transcript. That's an administrative matter. I was interested in making sure that the legal advisor was aware of the call because I didn't see anybody from the legal advisor's office.
And why were you so concerned about the legal advisor being aware of this call that you saw nothing basically wrong with the substance or content of the call?
Because I did not see anybody from the legal advisor's office in the listening room, and I wanted to make sure somebody from the legal advisor's office was aware, and I wanted to make sure it was a senior person.
And what is it that you wanted them to be aware of specifically?
I wanted them to be aware of the call because I wanted them to know what had transpired.
What concerned you to the point where you wanted them to know what had transpired that you went directly to legal counsel to inform them of?
My equivalent, the head of NSC Legal, was and is John Eisenberg. He was my equivalent in that position. I wouldn't go to somebody subordinate to him. I would go to him.
Didn't you testify earlier that you were concerned about the political fallout
I was,
based on the political climate in D.C.?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. And so how long have you supervised Lieutenant Colonel Vindman?
July 15 to October 31 or so. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ambassador Volker, you testified that you believe congressional pressure helped unfreeze the security assistance being released. Do you still stand by that testimony today?
I believe it was important. I met with staff members of the Senate Armed Services Committee. I then saw the letter that several senators signed and sent to Chief of Staff Mulvaney, and I was briefed about the possibility of a couple of phone calls from some senior members of the Senate as well.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I yield my remaining time to you.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. Ambassador Volker, just want to follow up on a couple of questions about Ukrainians not being aware of the aid being withheld. You're aware, I'm sure, of the testimony of Colonel Vindman that, in fact, he was contacted by someone within the Ukrainian embassy who was concerned about the hold prior to its becoming public?
I was not aware of that, but I take that.
Are you aware of Ms. Croft's testimony and transcripts that have been released that, in fact, the Ukrainians found out quite quickly after the hold was placed in July that she was impressed with Ukrainian tradecraft and that the Ukrainians had a reason to keep it silent, not make it public?
I saw that in her testimony.
You don't have any reason to question whether, in fact, that testimony was accurate, do you?
No, I don't.
So the Ukrainians did find out before it was public, at least according to these two witnesses. But nevertheless, the Ukrainians certainly found out it was public when it was published in the newspaper, right?
That is correct, in August 29th.
And at the time they found out from the newspaper, they still hadn't had the White House meeting, and they still didn't have the aid. And at that point, they had already had the conversation with the president in which she asked them to investigate the Bidens, correct?
That is correct.
Mr. Krishnamurthy.
Good evening to both of you, and thank you for your service. Ambassador Volker, on page 7 of your opening statement today, you said, since events surrounding your earlier testimony, October 3rd, quote-unquote, a great deal of additional information and perspectives have come to light. I have learned many things that I did not know at the time of the events in question, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
That includes conversations that occurred as well as meetings that occurred of which you weren't a part, correct?
That's correct.
Sir, you obviously were not a part of the July 25th call. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
You were not aware that Ambassador Sondland, according to your opening statement, had a call with President Trump on July 26th, correct?
That is correct.
On September 1st, you weren't present for the sidebar meeting between Ambassador Sondland and Special Advisor Yermak. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
And you certainly weren't part of the phone call between Ambassador Taylor and Ambassador Sondland, in which Ambassador Sondland, according to multiple people now, said that everything, a White House meeting as well as military aid, were dependent on public announcements of investigations. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
And certainly, sir, you weren't part of the phone call on September 7th between Ambassador Sondland and President Trump, in which President Trump insisted that President Zelensky go to a mic and publicly announce investigations of President Trump's domestic rivals. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
And certainly you weren't part of the September 8th phone call between Ambassador Sondland and President Trump, where President Trump again insists that these announcements have to happen. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
Sir, you say that you weren't a witness to any kind of quid pro quo or conditionality between military assistance and investigations, what someone called missiles for misinformation today. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
But, sir, you weren't present for many, if not all, of the phone calls and conversations where these alleged instances of quid pro quo occurred. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
Sir, let me turn your attention to another topic that's come up today. It came up last Friday. You have high regard for Ambassador Yovanovitch, correct?
Yes, I do.
I presume that you were aware that as the ambassador was testifying, President Trump actually tweeted very disparaging remarks about her, right?
Yes, I saw that moment.
And I presume that you disapprove of those types of tweets, correct?
Yes, I don't think that's appropriate.
You've supervised many, many people over the years during your career in the Foreign Service, right?
Yes, I have.
And you would never do that to one of your direct reports or anybody who worked in your organization, right?
No, I would not.
It's just wrong.
Yeah. I believe that even when you feel like you need to criticize, criticism is private, praise is public.
And I also believe that you're a man of honor and you would not attack a veteran. You would not attack someone who is currently serving in the military who's doing their duty, correct?
I respect the service of our members in uniform.
In fact, there's a certain man that we both admire, the late Senator John McCain.
Yes.
Who unfortunately was attacked, not only when he was alive, but after he died, by the current president. Isn't that right?
That is true.
And I presume that you would disapprove of all of those attacks on John McCain, right?
Yes, I know John. I knew John McCain very, very well for a very long time. He's an honorable man and very much a war hero for this country.
Well, today, sir, as Lieutenant Colonel Vindman was testifying, our president used the official Twitter account of the Office of the President to attack Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's credibility. I presume you don't approve of those types of tweets either, do you?
I was not aware of that, and as with Ambassador Yovanovitch, it's not appropriate.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you
for your service, and thank you, Mr. Morrison, for yours as well.
That concludes the member questioning. I now recognize Ranking Member for any closing comments he has.
Thank you. As the first day of this week's impeachment TV marathon draws to a close, I'd like to remind the American people what we're watching. The public hearings are the culmination of 3 years of incessant Democrat efforts to find a crime to impeach the president. First, they tried to manufacture evidence that the president colluded with Russia. To accomplish this task, the DNC and the Clinton campaign worked with a former British spy, Christopher Steele. still assembled a dossier of false information alleging the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. That dossier was largely assembled from Russian and Ukrainian sources that the Democrat contractors worked with. Next, they primed their hopes on the work of Robert Mueller. Mueller spent 2 years and millions of taxpayer dollars seeking evidence of a crime that we know wasn't committed. Mueller's failure was a devastating blow to Democrats who clearly hoped his work to be the basis for the removal of the president. Today, we are witnessing the Ukraine hoax, the direct-to-TV sequel to the Russia collusion hoax. The plot of the Ukraine hoax is hard to follow. It shifts from day to day. First, the Democrats claimed they had evidence of quid pro quo, then extortion and witness intimidation. Now Democrats are pinning their hopes on bribery. Like any good Hollywood production, Democrats needed a screen test before releasing their latest attack on the president. They leveraged the secrecy of the House Intelligence Committee to interview a cast of characters in preparation for these public hearings. With the media's enthusiastic support, they built a narrative based on selectively leaked testimony. Speaker Pelosi and the Democrats on this committee are seeking the truth. They would want to know the answers to the following questions that they refuse to ask. To what extent did the whistleblower coordinate with the Democrats on this committee and or his staff? What is the full extent of Ukraine's election meddling against the Trump campaign in 2016? Why did Burisma hire Hunter Biden, and what did he do for them? And did his position impact any U.S. government actions under the Obama administration? The American people were promised a grave and somber impeachment inquiry. Instead, they got the salacious spy screen comedy that they've been working on for 3 years. Good night. See you in the morning.
I thank the gentleman, and I thank you both for your testimony today. I would highlight a couple things about what we've heard this afternoon. First, Ambassador Volker, your written testimony in which you say, in hindsight, I now understand that others saw the idea of investigating possible corruption involving the Ukrainian company Burisma as equivalent to investigating former Vice President Biden. I saw them as very different, the former being appropriate and unremarkable, the latter being unacceptable. In retrospect, you said, I should have seen that connection differently, and had I done so, I would have raised my own objections. Ambassador, we appreciate your willingness to amend your earlier testimony in light of what you now know. And I think you made it very clear that knowing what you do today, that in fact the president sought an investigation of his political rival, Vice President Biden, that you would not have countenanced any effort to encourage the Ukrainians to engage in such conduct. I appreciate also that you were able to debunk, I hope, for the last time, the idea that Joe Biden did something wrong when he, in accordance with U.S. policy, sought to replace a corrupt prosecutor, something that not only the U.S. State Department wanted, not only the European Union wanted, and not only the IMF wanted, but was the consensus position of the United States national security infrastructure. You didn't get a lot of questions about that today, as other witnesses did, because I think you effectively said that was all nonsense. We appreciate your candor about that. Mr. Morrison, I think what is most remarkable about your testimony is the acknowledgement that immediately after the Vice President met with President Zelensky in Warsaw, you witnessed Gordon Sondland meeting with Andrei Yermak, top advisor to President Zelensky, and then immediately thereafter, Sondland told you that he had informed the Ukrainians that if they wanted that $400 million in military aid, they were going to have to do those investigations that the president wanted. And you were later informed, and this is also significant as you've testified here today, that the Ambassador Sondland had a subsequent conversation with President Trump and informed you that it wasn't going to be enough for the Ukrainian prosecutor general to announce the investigations the president wanted. President Zelensky had to do it himself. if he wanted to get that aid, let alone the meeting in the White House. Now, you've been asked to opine on the meaning of the term bribery, although you weren't asked to opine on the meaning of the terms high crimes and misdemeanors. But bribery, for those watching at home, is the conditioning of official acts in exchange for something of personal value. The official acts we're talking about here are a White House meeting that President Zelensky desperately sought, and as you have acknowledged, Ambassador Volker, was deeply important to this country at war with Russia, to show the United States had this new president's back. That meeting was important. That meeting is an official act. The military assistance is even more significant because Ukrainians are dying every day in their war with Russia. And so the withholding of military assistance to get these investigations, which you now have acknowledged, Ambassador Volker, was wrong for the president to request, the idea of withholding that military aid to get these political investigations should be anathema, to repugnant to every American, because it means the sacrifice not just of Ukrainian national security, but American national security for the interests of the president personally and politically. Now, my Republican colleagues, all they seem to be upset about with this is not that the president sought an investigation of his political rival, not that he withheld a White House meeting and $400 million in aid we all passed on a bipartisan basis to pressure Ukraine to do those investigations. Their objection is he got caught. Their objection is that someone blew the whistle, and they would like this whistleblower identified, and the president wants this whistleblower punished. That's their objection, not that the president engaged in this conduct, but that he got caught. Their defense is, well, he ended up releasing the aid. Yes, after he got caught. That doesn't make this any less odious. Now, Americans may be watching this and asking, why should the United States care about Ukraine? Why should we care about Ukraine? And this was the import, I think, of the conversation, the now infamous conversation, in that Kiev restaurant with Gordon Sondland holding the phone away from his head because the president was talking so loud. What does the president ask in that call the day after the now infamous call he had with Zelensky? What does he ask on that cell phone call? Not whether the Rada had passed some new anti-corruption reform. No. Are the Ukrainians going to do the investigation? Meaning into Biden. And Sondland's answer is they're going to do it. They'll do essentially anything the president wants. But what's more telling is the conversation, I think, that Sondland has with the Foreign Service officer Holmes afterwards, in which the president says, basically, Donald Trump doesn't give a expletive about Ukraine. He cares about the big things. And Mr. Holmes says, well, Ukraine's at war with the Russians. That's kind of a big thing. And Sondland's answer is, no. He cares about big things that affect his personal interests. This is why Americans should care about this. Americans should care about what happens to our allies who are dying, but Americans should care about their own national security and their own president and their own constitution. And they will need to ask themselves, as we will have to ask ourselves in Congress, are we prepared to accept that a president of the United States can leverage official acts, military assistance, White House meetings, to get an investigation of a political rival? Are we prepared to say, well, you know, I guess that's just what we should expect of a president of the United States? I don't think we want to go there. I don't think our founding fathers would have wanted us to go there. Indeed, I think when the founding fathers provided a remedy, that remedy being impeachment, they had the very concern that a president of the United States may betray the national security interests of the country or personal interests. They put that remedy in the Constitution, not because they wanted to willy-nilly overturn elections. No, because they wanted a powerful anti-corruption mechanism when that corruption came from the highest office in the land. We are adjourned. I ask the audience to please allow the witnesses to leave the room before they exit.
A marathon day of impeachment testimony now on the books, and once again, we have learned a lot that we didn't know when the day began. In fact, from one of the four witnesses who were questioned today, the president's former special Ukraine envoy, Kurt Volker, we heard testimony that differed from what he himself previously had told lawmakers behind closed doors. And from Tim Morrison, a former NSC staffer, there was both a benign assessment of the president's July 25th call with the president of Ukraine, but a call he did go straight to NSC attorneys to inform them about and restrict access to. There was also his recollection that Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the EU, who testifies tomorrow, told him that he was pressing the Ukrainians to have, he said, their prosecutor general make a statement with respect to the investigations as a condition of having the freeze on military aid lifted. And about that July 25th call, which Morrison told lawyers about, he told them that they should restrict access to it. Morrison claimed it ended up on a compartmented, classified server by mistake, the result, he said, of what he called an administrative error. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, the decorated Army Lieutenant Colonel and Soviet refugee, spoke about his actions after listening in on the call, which he characterized as inappropriate and improper. And the White House responded with tweets casting doubts on his competence and his loyalty. It has been a long day. Joining us, our political team and our legal team, John Dean, Jeffrey Toobin, David Axelrod, Gloria Borger, also Kerry Cordero, Jen Psaki, and former Senator Rick Santorum. Let's just get some quick thoughts from everybody here. I may interrupt as well because we expect to hear both from Devin Nunes and Adam Schiff right outside at the podium. So, Gloria?
Well, what was most striking to me was Ambassador Volker, who I think was very honest in saying...
And that's him leaving the building.
He is leaving. And he came across as a character witness for Joe Biden and said that, "I'm sorry, I didn't know at the time that Burisma, the energy company, equaled Biden. And I proceeded without knowing that. And now I'm sorry that I didn't know that." And the second thing, of course, was the Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who was so striking in proclaiming his patriotism to this country and saying that he reported this because he felt effectively that it was unpatriotic and that the president's phone call was stunning to him. And then he was attacked by the White House as well as by some people on that committee.
David?
You know, on Volker, I thought he was very interesting. I think that he was in part trying to clean up the record for himself. He also, I think, was trying to clean up his reputation a little bit here. And I think what you have there is someone who genuinely wanted to get aid flowing to the Ukrainians, genuinely wanted to get a meeting, and played along with all these characters to try and get that done. And I think that's really the story that he was telling here. But one last point on this. I step back and try and look at it from a political perspective. Oh, here you go.
Let's listen, Jim Jordan.
Speaking of politics.
You also see now why Chairman Schiff wanted to put them in the afternoon. I mean, and you also see why we, remember, Ambassador Volker was the very first witness we deposed, and we called for the release of his transcript and getting that out for the American people to see, because he's the definitive source on this. He was the special envoy, and I think you saw him tell this story. Now, the one part I think is so important, he even told the Ukrainians when they did learn late August that the aid had been held, he said, "Don't worry about it. We'll get this worked out." And that's exactly what happened. And it got worked out without any promise, commitment, announcement, start of any type of investigation. So this was a very good day for the truth, a very good day for the President of the United States, a very good day for the country. And the sad thing is, as I said in the hearing, these two individuals are no longer working in our government because they're the kind of public service servants that you appreciate. Mr. Winthrop.
Go ahead.
Mr. Zeld.
So some of the important facts to recap. Ambassador Volker says that on the July 25th call that President Zelensky doesn't know that there's a hold on aid. He gets a readout from both the U.S. side and the Ukraine side, and there's no reference to a quid pro quo, extortion, bribery, a hold on aid. On July 26, President Zelensky meets with Ambassador Sondland and Volker. There's no reference to quid pro quo, bribery, extortion, a hold on aid. Then over the course of the next several weeks, Ambassador Volker is in frequent contact with the Ukrainians, And there is no reference in any of those conversations to hold on aid, quid pro quo, extortion, bribery, in any way, shape, or form. It's not until the end of August. Ukraine reads it in Politico on August 29th. They then get confirmation that there's a hold on aid. The aid gets released shortly thereafter. And guess what Ukraine had to do in order to get that hold lifted? Absolutely nothing. Ukraine didn't have to do absolutely anything to get that hold on aid released shortly after they had that confirmation at the end of August. Something else that's really important is that the Democrats and some in the media like to just say that the Burisma-Zelensky issue is just totally debunked. Even though Burisma is a corrupt Ukrainian company run by a corrupt Ukrainian oligarch, hiring Hunter Biden by Hunter Biden's own admission, solely because his last name, solely because he's the vice president's son, at least $50,000 a month. No Ukraine experience, no energy experience. His father is meanwhile the person running point, literally the most conflicted person out in the Obama administration.
Congressman Lee Zeldin talking. I just want to get some quick feedback. Continuing, David Axelrod.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is, look, I think the facts are not getting better for the president here. And I think, and this is why you see Devin Nunes close every day with his assault on the process. And I think it probably plays, Rick can speak to it, probably plays with the base of the Republican Party. And for now, what the president needs is to hold the Republicans in Congress, make sure the Senate doesn't slide on him. And so they're playing I think Democrats are trying to create a fact pattern here, and it's been pretty effective. The Republicans are trying to play a political game, and it may be effective for them.
Jeff?
Today was a graveyard for Republican talking points. Let's start with three of them. One, the idea that all the information here was just secondhand. Well, to the morning was devoted almost entirely to the president's phone call of June 25th, where
July
25th, where the analysis, the detailed analysis of what the president said just established how clearly he was doing an exchange, aid, meeting in return for investigation of Biden. Second point, the idea that this couldn't be a exchange because Ukraine didn't know that the aid and the meeting were being withheld because of the failure
Jim
to
Jordan just said that, yeah.
Not true. Vindman said it wasn't true. Volker basically said it wasn't true. And third, the idea that what's this big deal because Ukraine got the money anyway. Ukraine didn't have to do an investigation,
which Lee Zeldin just said.
But the reason that the president had to give the aid is because he got caught. And the whistleblower, the timing with a whistleblower complaint comes in September 9th. They get notice that they've been busted, and it's only then that the aid is released. So the idea that, you know, out of the goodness of their hearts, they decided, well, you know, after all, we do want to send aid to protect the Russians. It's not true. The reason the aid was released is because they got caught in this scheme.
John?
Big difference to me, Anderson, is today it became very clear that as these hearings are progressing, they're becoming much more partisan. The Republicans were very civil in the early days. It's not so much today. And this is not a predecessor or a successor of Watergate. This is a whole new breed of investigation and impeachment inquiry. And that was really striking to me today.
More polarized,
yes.
Carrie?
I thought the two hearings really were very different, the morning hearing and the afternoon. I mean, in the morning, we had Jennifer Williams and Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, and they are individuals who did not have direct contact with the president. So they couldn't really speak to his exact intent and what he was orchestrating behind the scenes. They could talk about what they heard on the call and their reaction to it. With Ambassador Volker, we get closer to the core group that was working more in the president's direct interest and was in touch with the president personally. Even though Ambassador Volker then, I think, really, I agree with David, is trying to rehabilitate himself in some way, trying to present himself in a way where he can be looking forward and doesn't want to be known as being part of the activities that Rudy Giuliani and Gordon Sondland were perhaps doing. And so I think there is an enormous amount of anticipation going into Gordon Sondland's testimony tomorrow, because he was in touch with the president and he was working with Rudy Giuliani and he was working with the State Department. And so he
also said a lot of things to a lot of people. Some of it, I mean, is he going to make the argument that, well, actually, I was just kind of bragging. I really didn't have constant contact with the president, or I couldn't call the president anytime I wanted, which is what he told some people.
Maybe. I mean, in his addendum, too, he said he couldn't remember if he had made one or two calls. And we heard the confirmation today that he had bragged that he could be in touch with the president anytime he wants. I was struck today by the fact that these two, that Morrison and Volker, they were the Republican selections. That's who they wanted to be their witnesses. And yes, they, you know, they tried to defend the president. They tried to be on Republican talking points at time. But they basically acknowledged that everything that was done was wrong and they just didn't know about it, as Gloria said. Now, I think that completely strains credibility to suggest that Volker, somebody who's been in Washington for decades, running a think tank, politically connected, didn't know. This isn't about him. But, you know, ultimately coming away from today, they said Biden didn't do anything wrong. They said that the Ukraine CrowdStrike is a conspiracy theory. And they both acknowledged that the president of the United States should not be seeking political dirt on an opponent.
Did you believe Morrison when he said that the reason after he heard the call, he immediately went to attorneys? He didn't go to Kupperman, who was his superior, not because he said it was because he was afraid it was going to leak or it might spread out. And he hadn't seen an NSC attorney in the Situation Room monitoring the call.
That makes no sense. I will say, no offense to the lawyers on the panel, but you don't go to a lawyer unless you think something is wrong in the White House, in the NSC, or if you're working in any portion of the White House. And he clearly heard something that he was concerned about for understandable reasons, and he reported it to a lawyer. The only thing wrong here is he didn't acknowledge that.
Which, Senator Santorum, your thoughts? Because with the follow-up to that, that Morrison said that he did not also press Ukrainians ever about what the president had said on the call, not because he said he didn't agree with it, but he didn't say that that's why he didn't press.
Yeah, look, you might find it hard to believe, but I don't see it the way you folks see it. I look at it from a much bigger picture perspective of how the American public is looking at this. And I think if you looked at the witnesses today, the witnesses last week, what you see is that everybody involved in Ukraine policy was on the same page. Listen, everyone was saying, this is our policy of Ukraine. By the way, the president put all those people in place.
Now everyone, he's mad about it.
Every one of the people that are on there all had the same thing, which was to change the Obama policy, which now Democrats are decrying as horrific and awful policy that was leaving the Ukrainians without any way to defend themselves. And finally, we have a group of people at the State Department and at the White House who are supporting Ukraine. We have them in there and fighting for Ukraine. And now the Democrats are saying, well, you know, this is wonderful.
Rick, let me just ask you a question. What you're saying is that the policy shifted because this lethal aid that was not awarded by the Obama administration has been awarded by the Trump administration. And that's really important to Ukraine, right?
It is.
Yeah. So it gives them quite a bit of leverage, the president, if he wants something from them, if he holds up the aid that you
say
is essential.
But as you know, the president has gave him aid before this aid package. This is not the first aid lethal aid package.
Understood.
Reality is, here's my point. My point is that I like to compare this to really the obstruction case against the president on the Mueller report. What you had in the obstruction case, you had a bunch of adults around there and you had the president spouting off saying, oh, I wish we should go after this guy. We should go after this guy. But they never did. Why? Because he has adults in the room who put up with his, you know, wild ideas, and then they do the right thing. That's exactly what happened here.
No, what happened here is they all followed what the president's direction was to hold out this aid in exchange for announcing an investigation. And they were 2 days away from doing that. They only didn't do it because they were caught.
You heard every single one. You've heard the vice president. You've heard the secretary of state all say that they were working toward getting the president, who, as we all know, is not a big foreign aid guy and doesn't want him involve himself in shooting wars anywhere. And so the idea that this was the only thing when his natural inclination is to be against these things in the first place. I just think it doesn't
matter. But here's the thing I don't understand about your argument. Two things. One, you said that everybody was on the same page. They actually weren't. They were all on the same page in that they opposed. They thought it was a bad idea and not good that the president brought up Burisma.
Yes. Right. Right.
Also, they weren't all on the same page executing the same important foreign policy. In fact, they have testified that there is this whole, if they were actually using the arms, the levers of the U.S. government, that would be one thing. But they're using Rudy Giuliani and Lev Parnas and his.
I just said all of the people that testified the last few days are all on the same page. I would agree with you. Rudy Giuliani is
not. What we also heard today was that they were all on the same page in bewilderment as to why this aid was held up.
I go back to a president who is prone to saying erratic things and things that are problematic, but in the end, does the right thing.
This isn't what he said. This is what he did. He froze the aid.
Well, you say he did. I would say he froze the aid for a variety of reasons. You say, and again, it's about whether to give the president the benefit of the doubt.
No one seems to know.
Well, here we go.
You say, well, he was, you know, I heard Schiff say that, Congressman Schiff say that, well, Volker cleared Vice President Biden. How did he clear him? Oh, I know Joe Biden. He's a good guy. He'd never do it. That's not clearing anybody. That's character.
Wait. Why did Gordon Sondland go to the Ukrainian official Yarmuk and have this conversation the day after Trump had the conversation with Zelensky about the investigation and aid? Why then did that happen?
It goes back to the point I've been making. Just because aid and this were talked about in the same conversation doesn't mean they were one was traded for the other. Linkage has never been proven.
Let's show Volker when he sort of amended his prior testimony in his opening statement. Let's play that.
I did not know that President Trump or others had raised Vice President Biden with Ukrainians or had conflated the investigation of possible Ukrainian corruption with investigation of the former vice president. In retrospect, for the Ukrainians, it would clearly have been confusing. In hindsight, I now understand that others saw the idea of investigating possible corruption involving the Ukrainian company Burisma as equivalent to investigating former Vice President Biden. I saw them as very different, the former being appropriate and unremarkable, the latter being unacceptable. In retrospect, I should have seen that connection differently, and had I done so, I would have raised my own objections.
So it strains credulity, honestly, that you don't know that Burisma equals Biden. I'm sure Sondland will say this tomorrow as well. But he had conversations with Rudy Giuliani. Maybe Rudy Giuliani only mentioned Burisma. Maybe you could look it up. Maybe you could.
And also,
Burisma
in the
is a corrupt company.
But that's what they will say. They will say, oh, it's a corrupt company, which is one more corrupt company. But why was Sondland talking about deliverables? What were the deliverables here? Did Sondland say to this group of people, oh, the president only cares about Biden. He doesn't really care about Ukraine. And these were the guys, they were sitting in the Oval Office with the president, Volker, Sondland, Perry, when the president said to them, talk to Rudy, and he thought that was okay.
Ambassador Volker also referenced the 2016 investigations. The only thing that means is the CrowdStrike conspiracy theory. There's nothing else that means. He was fine with that when he was working on behalf of the administration. He was fine with getting that through, pushing that with the Ukrainians. Today, he said there was no truth to it. So, I mean, his own testimony was a little all over the place.
I want to check in with CNN's Jim Acosta, who's at the White House, because, again, like Friday, today was marked by attacks on a witness from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, this time Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. Jim?
Yeah, Anderson, it was a bit more muted coming from the president today. I will tell you, I talked to an administration official earlier this evening responding to the day's testimony, who described the day as somewhere between a tie and a win. So that is what they're hanging their hat on over here at the White House. But Anderson, the president did not directly attack Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman in the same way he went after Marie Yovanovitch last Friday, the former Ukraine ambassador. And that came as a relief to people inside the White House. I talked to an administration official who said they were sort of bracing for this to happen. But when the president went to the microphones or was in front of the microphones earlier today in a cabinet meeting and talked a little bit about Alexander Vindman and talked about that moment during the testimony earlier today where somebody, one of the Republican members referred to him as Mr. Vindman, and he snapped back, that's Lieutenant Colonel Vindman. The president referenced that, and inside the White House, they were glad that the president had a chance to get that off of his chest because they were worried he was going to be tweeting about Vindman all day long.
Jim Acosta, thanks very much. We'll have more from you throughout the night. We're also going to be on from 11 to 1 a.m., so, you know, set your clock.
You know, just on this point of that the president's not a big foreign aid guy, and that's absolutely true. He's also not really a big anti-corruption guy. That hasn't been a big priority of his. One thing we learned today is that he never raised in previous calls the issue of corruption, and even in the call that he had on the 25th, the only things he raised were crowdsource and the Biden. So it kind of begs the question, is he really concerned about corruption in Ukraine, or is he concerned about these political...
Right. Volker was asked about Russia, about Saudi Arabia, about Turkey, and obviously the president of Turkey just visited the White House.
I would come back to this to the simple fact that everybody that he's employed at the State Department, at NSA, are all pushing Ukraine on corruption. So the answer is yes. And you can say, well, the president personally does it. Well, president, look at the president's speech. He doesn't talk about half the thing. His administration does lots of things. He never talks about any of them. He talks about you. He talks about the media. He doesn't talk about policy.
That's right. Hey, hold on. Wait. This argument is insane. You cannot argue that the president of the United States' words do not matter.
I didn't say they don't matter.
Or that he's just sort of spouting off, or he has his own views.
But actions matter, too.
When you're talking about issues of... And they held up the aid, and Jennifer Williams testified this morning that they had absolutely no idea. Everybody was confounded of why the aid was held up. And OMB said that it was from the White House chief of staff, which is Mick Mulvaney, who won't come and testify. The president's words matter. And it cannot be that on one hand, we're supposed to take him seriously as the commander-in-chief and the person who's running the government. And on the other hand, his defenders say it doesn't matter what he said. Ignore all that other crazy. It doesn't make any sense.
The reality is we ignore about 80 to 90% of what the president says because
then he's resigning.
Look at his tweets. I mean, we ignore most of those things he tweets and say, Trump.
So your position is... He shouldn't be impeached because he's surrounded by people who are less corrupt and crazy than he is.
He's not corrupt or crazy. Look, this is a man who's been under attack for 3 years as an illegitimate president with a Congress looking to impeach him from the day they got in. And so, yeah, is he a bit, I would say he gets a little.
Mitch McConnell said his primary objective as soon as Barack Obama was elected was that Barack Obama should be a one-term president. Yeah, Barack Obama should have gone to Canada.
He didn't say he should impeach the president.
And said he should have gone to Canada and said, give me dirt on, you know, John McCain or I'll end relations. I mean, so what? He has political opponents. You know, tough luck. That's how it works.
There's a difference between political opponents who want to fight it out and those who are
Let's just
go back to that way this whole thing started. The day after Mueller testified, the president called the president of Ukraine and specifically asked him to open an investigation on his political opponent. And I'm telling you, I appreciate that you're a strong and able advocate. But if this were another president, you would have a different view of that conversation.
I would say that what the president did, and I'll use the term that Volker used, it was inappropriate. I agree. I think it was inappropriate. I don't think he should have asked about Biden. He shouldn't have mentioned him in the conversation. Should he be impeached for doing so? No.
You know what? Politically, that would be the smart place for Republicans to go. Instead, you
don't think it was inappropriate.
No, I understand, but there are very few who will say it.
They're not saying it.
And, you know, you have a committee full of people there who are the president's chief supporters in the House who are arguing that up is down and down is up and everything was fine and there's nothing to see here. That isn't a good argument.
You know, even Mike Pence's aide thought it was unusual, as she put it. Yeah. And Morrison went to the ethics.
Is she the one who's now been disavowed as being?
She's been disavowed as not being
the State Department.
She works for the State Department. So enough people thought that it was weird that it was put in file 13 because they didn't want people to see it. So it was beyond inappropriate.
I disagree. I don't think it's beyond inappropriate. I think we have a president who does a lot of outrageous things.
And, so it's outrageous.
Does a lot of outrageous things. Yeah. I said this in this case, it was inappropriate. The reality is, as I said before, he has a bunch of people around him to make sure that we stay on the straight and narrow.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back 11 p.m. For another special edition of 360. The analysis, the hearings continue. Quick break. Cuomo Primetime is next.
now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.